The information provided on this podcast does not and is not intended to constitute legal advice. Listeners should contact their attorney to obtain advice with respect to any particular legal matter.
This is the first episode podcast for the Pacifica Issues podcast, and our overall umbrella of our podcast is our take on legal issues affecting the Pacifica community. I'm so honored to have this talk on this issue of birthright citizenship in an American Samoa. It's such a hot topic, and I think we really need to emphasize or really need to sort of assess the issue and have a good understanding, hopefully have a good understanding after our talk, and what it entails and how it would impact the people of American Samoa, not just the people of American Samoa living in American Samoa, but those who are in the diaspora, so that they could have an understanding, so that they are not easily persuaded by social media and whatnot. So. Mm-hmm. And my name is Leo Malfosio. I'll be the co-host for our podcast tonight. And from Auto American Samoa, born and raised in American Samoa. And my dad's name is Ropati Alfosio, and my mom's name is Sipau Alfosio. I've got four brothers. They all got their families. I've got my beautiful wife, Lunga Alfosio. We've got two kids and one on the way, so we're very blessed to have another one. Here with me is...
Hi, my name is Ruby Uosami Fanaika Whangau. My father is Tolovai Avease Whangau from American Samoa, and my mother is Susana Bele Fanaika Whangau from Tonga. Our show is sponsored by Laumei Blessings. It's a business that sells affordable jewelry and promotes working for yourself. Our show is also sponsored by Fanaika Whangau Consulting, which helps businesses grow and provides legal research for individuals. And as Leoma mentioned, our topic is, do you think birthright citizenship is good for American Samoa? And this is a topic that we're going to discuss today and hope that listeners will chime in later with comments as we share this episode with the rest of you.
You know, when it's, this issue of birthright citizenship first came about, and I think it was on Fox, it was on John Oliver's show, and which airs on HBO, and it talked about a very interesting topic where I think a lot of it really sort of propelled people to talk about this issue of birthright citizenship for people in American Samoa. And essentially what the topic was is, you know, American Samoa and the U.S. military, you know, are people serving in the military? Why are they not given birthright citizenship? So, and then of course, social media sort of went with this idea and sort of, you know, blows this whole thing out of proportions and literally just thrusting the issue down people's throats in terms of, and of course it created this paranoia within the Pacifica community. And, you know, it made them think, oh, what is really going on in American Samoa? And, this issue of birthright citizenship, is it the right thing for American Samoa? Of course, and I think, you know, I'd say about 75% of the people in American Samoa are still not thoroughly understanding the issue. And so what they, of course, their perspective is going to be swayed by the media. And so, you know, of course, all the people just jump on social media, post stuff on Facebook and say, why is it, you know, such this way that, you know, our people, brothers and sisters serving in the U.S. military are not guarantee this birthright citizenship. And I think when John Oliver's show aired, from then on, it sort of triggered down to, this case. I know a lot of people knows about this case. It's called the Tuaua versus the United States case. And, you know, essentially there was this client who was of Samoa. He's a U.S. national. He's from American Samoa, and I think he moved to the U.S. to you know, like most people who moved to the U.S. to find, you know, just better opportunities for their families and whatnot, better schools for their children. So he comes to the U.S., and I think it happened in California. Comes in, and he applies for, I think, a job with the Sheriff's Department. And so he was denied, right? So he was denied the job. And the reason for his denial for this opportunity to not become a police officer was that he was not a U.S. citizen. And so he literally took this case. He sued the State Department and in 2012. And I think at that time, Obama was the president of the U.S. And essentially what he sued for was to, you know, to sort of force the government to recognize that American Samoans' birthright citizenship is anyone that's born in American Samoa is afforded this, you know, is given the opportunity to become citizen, U.S. citizens. And his argument is that the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which is afforded to anyone that's born on U.S. soil, mm-hmm. Or guarantees anyone to become automatically becoming a citizen. That's essentially what his case is. And of course, it went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court essentially told, the ruling of the Supreme Court was that, you know, the 14th Amendment, which is what this plaintiff, Tuaua, and I think there were other people too that were involved in the case. He wasn't the only one, but there were other people that supported Tuaua in this case. And I think there were four other plaintiffs, but this is the main one, was Tuaua. And so the U.S. Supreme Court essentially said that the 14th Amendment does not apply to, you know, unincorporated territories of the U.S. And of course, a lot of people are saying, like, what is that, right? And so, mm-hmm. you know, and of course, I learned this from you know, the U.S. history courses that I took when I was back in American Samoa, where American Samoa is very significant in terms of their relationship with the U.S. In terms of, they are the only ones who are considered U.S. nationals. Out of anyone that's part of the U.S. And so we have this unique relationship,
yes,
with the U.S. where we're called an organized and an incorporated territory of the United States. And of course, everyone's going to say, well, what does that mean, right? And, you know, when it first started out back in 1900s, unorganized meaning that Congress has not really, still not organized a formal government within American Samoa, and incorporated meaning that, you know, simply because, you know, there was no indication that that Congress had ever wanted American Samoa to be part of this union, right? So this happened back in 1900s. It still exists today, and I think everyone is stipulated in the deed of cession. And I think to thoroughly understand this issue, one has to look at the history of American Samoa in the U.S., right? So, you know, how did it come about, and you know, how did we become part of the U.S.? So, you know, it started with, because I'm sure if someone were in the mainland, they were like, well, American Samoa was one island, right? But people don't know that there are two islands of Samoa. There's American mm-hmm. Samoa and there's Western Samoa. And of course, Western Samoa is an independent country, and they have, so they're independent, and you have American Samoa, who is under the U.S. It's a trust territory of the United States. So back in the 1800s, when the three superpowers, the Great Britain and Germany and then the United States, right? So after the war, and they had this interest of going into the Pacific Islands and sort of colonize all these islands, right? And there were, and so Samoa came about, And the U.S., United States, was more so interested in Pango Pango. And the main reason why they were interested in Pango Pango was because of its harbor. Pango Pango, American Samoa, has this groove that goes in. So they thought that that was really perfect to have a harbor over there, to sort of, you know, for people to go in there and for the ships, the military ships, to go over and refuel, and even for like for businesses and stuff to refuel over there, not just the military. So that was their idea. The U.S. was interested in American Samoa in that way. So of course, and then they have this treaty, these talks that happened in the 1800s, where so they went ahead and divided the Samoan Islands, right? The three superpowers, mm-hmm. You know, sort of, I don't know what the degrees are, but there's, you know, they divided it up, and there's, you know, American Samoa and then Western Samoa, which includes, and I'm going to name them the main ones. Western includes Bolu, Savai, Apolima. And then you have American Samoa, you have Tutuila, Manu'a, and Swains Island and all that. So, and then of course you have Western Samoa. They have their own little struggles with the you know, Germany and Great Britain colonizing them. And then of course, and you know, what's really interesting is that when so they, these two, the U.S. told these two that they, you know, all we wanted was American Samoa. You can go ahead and have at it with Western Samoa. And then Germany and Great Britain talked, and they essentially, Great Britain told the agreement was that, you know, we're not no longer interested in Western Samoa, but we have a fair amount of interest in Africa, right? And so what ended up happening is Germany withdrew their interest in Africa, but primarily focused on Western Samoa. And I think throughout history, that's why there's hardly any influence, German influence in Africa, but it's mostly Great Britain. Hmm. And so now that you have these two islands, American Samoa, who's under the U.S., and then you've got Western Samoa that's under Germany, and then of course the war went on. And Germany had to leave Samoa to go to war. And when they lost the war, I think it was World War II, they lost the war. And that's when New Zealand came in and took over control of Western Samoa. And then, of course, you have all those issues and whatnot, right? And then on the other side in American Samoa, you have the U.S., and what's funny was at that time, and I think who was the president at that time? The president had sent his general to talk to these, to, you know, sort of work the chiefs for American Samoa and tell them that, hey, we're really interested in your harbor, right? And I forgot to mention that when these superpowers went to Samoa, these islands were already at war. Hmm. Right, we're fighting amongst each other. You know, you have the Malietoas, all the high chiefs are fighting each other, and then they came at that time when that happened. And so you fast forward to this talk with the chiefs in American Samoa. So what are we going to do with, you know, the chiefs got together and sort of have this meeting and say, okay, so they got together and drafted what they thought was the Treaty of Cession turned out to be a deed of cession. And what's funny was they submitted it in the 1900s, submitted their document of the Treaty mm-hmm. of Cession.
Signed 1900, yeah.
They gave it to the U.S. Department of Navy at that time, and then the U.S. Department of Navy sent it to Germany, I mean to the U.S. Congress, and Congress had to send it. And it took them 29 years later that they finally read it and ratified the treaty. And of course, that's how this whole relationship with the U.S. began. And it's based on that legal document, the deed of cession. And what's interesting about that document was the main emphasis of the leaders of American Samoa at that time was their primary concern was to make sure that the Fa Samoan culture, the language, is protected, is preserved.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, you know, the language is sort of a touch on that and then the deed of cession.
I was just saying that's a very rich historical background for listeners to understand how this all started, because it, as you mentioned, it did start with the deeds.
You know, I did some search on the internet, you know, where Eni talked about the same issue, right? And he talks about, you know, what they thought was the Treaty of Cession turned out to be a deed of cession when it was translated to the English language. And so I thought that was interesting. And, you know, of course, you and I both know that, you know, once something becomes a deed, it concerns property, right? So, and I think
that's a good catch. Eni
alluded to that fact that, you know, there's something, you know, really tricky. I mean, there was something about that how it was formulated that way.
I think tricky, but also convenient, because this property agreement is something we're going to return back to in this discussion, because this is a property issue. This is a land issue. So I am glad that you caught that.
Thank you for listening. Please join us for our next episode on Pacifica Issues Podcast.